Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you must go. And I must bide.
Welcome back, Penn State fans, to the Penn Stated Football Podcast for post-Ohio State week. I think it feels a little bit like a funeral for Penn State. Sam Freeman from the Citizen's Voice joins me. I'm Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times Tribune, as always, joining you here. We'll preview Indiana, I guess, a little bit, but I don't know if there's really a I don't want to say there's no point. There's a point to it. I mean, Penn State's not out of anything right now. And you know, a lot of different things could go their way. And it could be a really special season. They beat Michigan. Michigan beats Ohio State. You got the three-way tie. Tiebreakers go your way. And you're in the championship game, maybe the playoff. Hey, who knows? It could be special. It doesn't feel really special right now. It feels like the same old. And Sam, I'm wondering, you've been picking Penn State to beat Ohio State all year. I thought they would go into a place where they've played very well, not necessarily won, not really ever won. It's been a long time since they've won in Columbus, but they've gone in there and played well. I thought the gap talent-wise had closed enough. I thought Manny Diaz was a difference maker. I thought Mike Yurcich, difference maker, and nothing made a difference. They go in there and play arguably, I think, their worst game in Columbus in a long while. So I guess, not to overinflate this, Sam, but do you believe in this team? Do you believe in the program still the way you did a week ago? I think this was the prove it game and they laid an egg. I don't know any other way to put that.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say that I think the future trajectory of the program is perhaps shaken, but you know, certainly where we thought the team could be this season, I don't think was, well, clearly wasn't accurate. I mean, you know, you look at the Ohio State game, it wasn't as close as, this is the first time that I feel like in a while we're saying it this way rather than the opposite. I don't think the game was as close as the score entails. You know, last season we look at a final score that looks like a blowout and we say, yeah, it was closer than that though. This year I see the one score game and I say, yeah, it wasn't that close. You know, I know Caden Saunders had that touchdown with 30 seconds left, but you know, at that point the game was effectively over. I mean, it was I suppose an onside kick there, but regardless, it was not a one score game this whole game. I think that the answer to this game was sort of staring us in the eyes this whole season. And I think we just didn't know what to make of it because, you know, Penn State hadn't really played any strong caliber opponents. There's certainly justification for that. And there's reason for that and strategy behind scheduling opponents the way they do. But, you know, if you look back at all the positives we laid out at the feet of this team, stuff like, you know, defense. I thought the defense played very well against Ohio State. And then on offense, some of the struggles, you know, we say the receivers aren't separating. There's not a true number one. There's a lot of inconsistency, especially as you get deeper into that room. And lo and behold, there's issues at wide receiver. We say the offensive line at times can be hit and miss. Lo and behold, you know, the offensive line struggles with JT again. As for this season, simultaneously, I'm with you in the sense that I understand why fans might be treating this like a funeral week. But I also understand the optimism for the program, you know, writ large. I mean, technically, you know, they can go and beat Michigan. They can go 11-1 and some crazy things can happen with the schedule. You know, even 11-1 and not making the playoff is an improvement over, you know, it's a newfound height for the Franklin tenure. I frankly don't think that's likely. And so I think 10-2 with a first year starting quarterback with a very young team, although disappointing, I would say that that's something to hang your hat on. It's still a positive season. You know, I know we've talked about this being the best chance for Penn State to sort of strike at that playoff, especially as compared to next year. But next year, you know, these players will have a a whole year under their belt as starters for some of them 2 years, you know, more development, more, you know, but at the same time, teams like Ohio State will have that same luxury. You know, teams like Michigan will have that same luxury. You know, young Kyle McCord didn't play like a, like the frantic first year starter that I felt like Drew did. So I don't know. It's certainly, it's an interesting landscape for Penn State. It's different, I'll say.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that that was closer to being an Ohio State blowout than it was a Penn State win. Now, certainly it's a one score game until about 4 minutes left, I think it was, when Ohio State, after the, you know, they go in and they punch the touchdown in there after Penn State kind of inexplicably went for the fourth down conversion there. And I thought that was a terrible call. And sent the wrong message. Let me put it that way. I certainly get it. If you have an offense that could pick that up, go for it. But they throw the ball on third down, looked awful. Then they come back out on fourth down, and James Franklin's answer at the end of the game to me was nonsense. You know, we don't know if we're getting the ball back. Well, if you don't know you're getting the ball back there, and I sort of agree with him, because I don't know that they are, but that tells me you have more confidence in your offense picking up the fourth down than your defense making a stop on Ohio State, which probably has to drive the ball 90 yards at that point to score. And he doesn't want them to kick a field goal there. He's looking at it a little differently than I am. But I thought it just sent absolutely the wrong message at that point. And I'm getting off the topic a little bit there, because the topic really is something you brought up. You know, is 11-1, if they can get there, a good season? And the answer is, of course it is. But I don't know if that gets them into the playoff. And I don't know if, you know, next year they're going to make the playoff more than likely. 12 teams make it. And Penn State's certainly one of the 12 best programs in the country. Certainly. They should make the playoff next year. But they're never going to make the playoff having to beat Ohio State and Michigan. And this was their chance to do that. And I'm not saying beat them both, but you have to win the game on the road in that situation to me. You have to, that's your statement game. And that's why I said last week, I don't see them beating Michigan if they can't beat Ohio State. And if I had to pick the Michigan game now, I'd say 27-6. I have no confidence that they're going to score. Offensively, they're bad. And worse, they made some really bad decisions that we can get into as we go along. But I think that was a belief game. You can, yeah, there was a way they could lose that game, I think, that would have looked okay. You know, you go out there and you lose 20-17, you play a really rugged game, and it's back and forth. It's a rock fight, and Marvin Harrison makes a play at the end to beat you because he's Marvin Harrison, and they're just forcing the ball his way. I get that, but I'm almost more concerned for Penn State that they couldn't stop him than I am that they couldn't move the ball on offense. Because that's where they should have been even. That's where they should have been okay. Because you have really good cornerbacks, quote unquote, really good cornerbacks, and Kalen King and Johnny Dixon. And I think they really are good cornerbacks. You have a defensive coordinator who should be able to figure out a scheme where you limit at least the willingness of Ohio State to go back to that well time and time and again. But second and 12, they hit Marvin Harrison for a first down, or they hit Marvin Harrison for nine, and you give them a third and three, the touchdown at the end of the game, you completely pass him off in a zone where he ends up covered by Kobe King, and the wrong King brother ends up, you know, trying to chase down Marvin Harrison. It looked bad. It looked like they couldn't control a guy they should have been able to control. And worse, a guy from Pennsylvania. How this team ends up in this spot year after year against Ohio State, I don't know. They lose in spectacular fashion to these guys. And look, I get it. I think Ohio State was a better team. I think they were very underrated coming into that game. I don't think they're going to be underrated moving forward because they shouldn't be. That's a defensively, that is a standout group. But I think Penn State is better than it looked. And I don't think Penn State could have been better than it looked in this game, because that was going to create this whole other list of questions. And now James Franklin's in it knee deep, hit, probably higher than that. And it's a, It's a real problem for Penn State because you have this, the same loss brings up the same conversation every year. Is this the right guy? Is this the right staff? Are they developing talent the right way? And it makes you roll your eyes because it's like, oh my God, we're still talking about this. It's talked about it in 2017, 18, the elite year. We're this far away from being elite and they're still this far away from being elite. I think that's more to me what, you know, the issue was with going out there and losing in the fashion that they did. Now, certainly the season is still, hey, there's a lot to play for. I mean, anything could happen and they could wind up, you know, and I don't think it's a lot of things that need to happen, but they could still be in the college football playoff talk come late November. I could see that, but I don't know if they're legitimately in that talk, even if they are in it. It's a numbers game at this point. And you have, I don't know what your number is going to be on this, but I have 5, 6, 7 teams every year that can maybe be in that national championship conversation with some legitimacy. And then there's teams 8, 9, and 10 who are probably not ever going to beat those top 7 teams, not ever going to be at that level, but they're going to beat everybody else below them. And I think Penn State perilously is in those 3 teams. And it's this epic struggle to get out of there. It could weigh you down, I guess, if you're a program and a coach, and that no matter what you do, it doesn't seem to work. And I think Penn State's done a lot of things recruiting wise, NIL wise to make it work. And it's not working, not against Ohio State. And you know, sadly for Penn State, that's where it matters most.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the number is probably pretty similar for me. I know that wasn't, you know, necessarily the meat of what you were saying, but yeah. You know, I look at the AP poll and Penn State sitting at 10.
I thought they'd be lower than that.
Yeah. I mean, I can see 10 because they, you know, I don't want to say they played terribly, but I mean, they certainly didn't play well either. It's, if I was running the poll, I'd probably have them drop lower, but where I'm at, in terms of this conversation of who would I feel comfortable, you know, betting on Penn State to beat, you know, you look at the 9 teams ahead of them, you know, in order, it's Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, Washington, Oklahoma, Texas, Oregon, Alabama. You know, I probably those undefeated teams, you know, especially after seeing the way Penn State played Ohio State, I don't know how you can feel comfortable heading into a game, even with a Washington, you know, and say, you know, this current iteration of the team, you know, is poised to really do some damage. And then you look at those teams outside of that top 6 or 7, you know, the Texas, Oregon, Alabama, those one loss teams. And I don't know that you still feel that great. I mean, certainly, Penn State can beat anybody on any given day. That's sort of what we talk about. But can this iteration, you know, I don't know, can this version of Penn State, I guess technically, but technically is not exactly what you're hoping for if you're, you know, if you're projecting this team's growth. I mean, like you said, the constant conversations that surround Franklin after the Ohio State games, after the Michigan games, if he goes out there and says, technically we could beat so-and-so and so-and-so, and you're not instilling confidence in anything. Now, he would never go out and do that. But, you know, if we're looking at this objectively, I don't see how they really stack up with some of these higher caliber teams. You talk about Marvin Harrison, and you know, I brought up last year and how I looked at the people in the press box and said it's only a matter of time before CJ Stroud starts hitting NFL throws because he's an NFL quarterback. And I sort of said the same thing coming into this game about Marvin Harrison. It's only going to be a matter of time before Marvin Harrison starts playing like, you know, arguably the best player in college football. I think he punched his ticket to New York here this past week as a side note.
Agreed.
But it didn't feel like Marvin Harrison suddenly turned it on in this game. And that's the difference between, I felt like my comment about Stroud last year and sort of the way we look at Marvin Harrison this year is it felt like all game Marvin Harrison was on. And, you know, certainly, like we said, if you're the best player in college football, perhaps that's just the way it's going to be. But, you know, teams are, I don't know. Marvin Harrison looked on from the beginning, like you said, converting second and longs, third and longs, you know, pretty much with ease. You know, I thought the defense had a honestly a pretty strong game outside of containing Marvin Harrison.
But that's what they had to do.
Wasn't, Exactly. It was how much of it. I mean, you hold the Ohio State rushing offense to under 80 yards. Nobody outside of Marvin Harrison has, Cade Stover had four catches, Carnell Tate had three, but the only person really getting the ball through the air felt like Marvin Harrison, and he did whatever he wanted to. I mean, he was 11 for 162 and a touchdown, and it frankly felt like more than that during the game.
He had the Parker Washington game from a year ago. Parker had 11 for 179 and a touchdown. I was surprised by that because I'm going to write about the receivers this week, because the receiver position, I think, it's a big talking point right now for Penn State because it's a problem. This is part of the issue too. I mean, fans put so much emphasis on recruiting rankings, and I get it because, you have to be a good player to get a high ranking. You never see a bad high school player get a 4-star ranking or a 5-star ranking, but then you end up ranking these guys in order where you think the talent level is. And you have Penn State fans now saying, well, how did they let Marvin Harrison go to Ohio State? The short answer to that is they didn't let him. They wanted Marvin Harrison. Everybody wanted Marvin Harrison. He's a 4-star kid. If his name was Tom Smith, maybe he goes to Syracuse or Penn State, but it's Marvin Harrison. He's not going to sneak by anybody. So Ohio State's putting the full court press on. They have a really, really great receivers coach in Brian Hartline, who recruits the hell out of the top of the rankings, and he gets Marvin Harrison. But if you put too much emphasis on the recruiting rankings, you lose sight of the fact sometimes that you still have to develop the kid. Who knows if Marvin Harrison is Marvin Harrison if he goes and plays for Taylor Stubblefield and Marcus Hagans, and no knock on those two guys, or if he plays in this offense. And again, no knock on Yursich, but they go to a certain school for a reason. And Ohio State puts receivers in the NFL. Until Penn State starts putting receivers into the NFL at the top of the draft, they're going to have to find a way to beat Ohio State with inferior receivers. And it's just the way it is. And I also would like to point out something else with Penn State's receivers here, because you're right. Ohio State had a guy, and he was the difference in the entire game. Defenses were pretty much even. I think the quarterbacks both were kind of shaky. I think McCord played better, but I expected if they were going to be kind of even that McCord might play a little better because he's at home and he has Marvin Harrison. So, I look at it as Harrison is a go-to guy in that offense. What did they rush? 41 times for 79 yards, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. They ran it enough to make sure that you couldn't just focus on Harrison, but they didn't run it successfully. Every big play they got was Marvin Harrison. Every big play. Stover made one, I think. They're not going to beat you if Stover's your number one guy, especially with Igbuka out. I don't know how anybody beats Ohio State when Igbuka plays, because now you can't just scheme your way out of Marvin Harrison. But the point I'm trying to make here is Marvin Harrison wasn't the top-rated receiver in Pennsylvania. If you look at like the 24/7 rankings, Lonnie White was. Penn State's, they had Lonnie White. They recruited the better, quote unquote, better prospect at the position, and he goes to play baseball, which, God bless him, that's his choice. Yeah, and he's going to be a good player. I've seen him. He is outstanding. But that's an explosive player that Penn State, when you talk about, oh, they can't separate, Lonnie White would be able to. He's that kind of athlete. He's Marvin Harrison. He's that kind of athlete. And I'm not sure this team thought that they'd come into 2023 without Parker Washington. That was kind of a surprise that he left. I don't think the coaching staff, they go in and they tell these guys, they give them their opinion at the end. Should you go or should you stay? I mean, I don't think they told Parker Washington to go. I think he wanted to leave. His choice. But there's two guys Penn State has right there. Didn't work out. Didn't work out with them being on the team this year. And then, somebody, I won't say who, but somebody in the office asked me, well, why didn't they hit the transfer portal for receivers? Well, the answer is they did. They just aren't any good. Dante Cephas can't play. He can play, but not in this offense. He can't pick it up for whatever reason. You see it all the time. And I think, James Franklin said it in his press conference this week. You have receivers who aren't consistent in practice. From everything I've heard, Cephas is one of them. And McLean's the other. McLean hasn't panned out. He's been great on special teams, but he hasn't panned out as a receiver. So that's four guys. You're expecting really good Parker Washington, potentially explosive Lonnie White. really good Dante Cephas, a guy, a big target in McLean. And none of them are great. This is why Lambert Smith has to be your number one guy when he's really a number two. And it's why Trey Wallace gets talked about like he's the savior for a week when he's just a sophomore trying to figure it out. They're not good at that position. But you got to figure out a way to not make that the focal point of the offense. They dropped back 50 times. And what really was for 56 minutes a one-score game. It was an inexcusable offensive game plan by Yurcich. And James coming out and defending it in the press conference. I mean, come on. Oh, he said the ratio wasn't that far off. The ratio was extremely far off. If you look at the amount of times you drop back, I mean, I think Aller carried seven times and maybe one of them was a called run. And if one of them was a called run, they only ran the ball 19 times. That means your two best offensive players aren't getting the ball. It made no sense to me what they did. And I walk out of this game thinking, are they that much worse talent-wise than Ohio State that they can never beat them? I don't know. I really don't have a feel for it because I don't think they played the type of game that I expected they would play. They made the receivers, who James was honest about Tuesday during the press conference when he said, look, they aren't getting enough separation. We need to get more explosiveness out of them. We need to get more consistency. But you don't make them the focal point of the game. You don't make it obvious to the world that that's your issue. And they did.
There's a difference between James this week in the press conference is talking about, you know, he's asked about right off the bat, the offensive identity, right? And he starts talking about third down situations, converting third downs, going for it on fourth, you know, short yardage defense, how you stack up against that. Those aren't identities. Those are, you know, being good on third down isn't an identity. That's a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no offense goes out and says, yeah, you know, you can say what makes it so good is we convert on third down, but it's not a strategy. It's like saying our offense is good because we score points. You know, like it's not a path. That's a way of measurement. You know, and you look at, you know, the run pass ratio. Number one, I don't see how it was close. Number one, number two, I don't love the answers about the ratio because what is the goal, right? Is the goal to pitch a 50-50 ratio and sort of artificially hit that number that we talked about last week where, yeah, you win the game if you run 30 times because, you know, typically teams that run more are running out the clock. Like, you know, are you just artificially trying to find the pass rush? Are you, to me, an identity is you find what works, you employ what works, and that's what you go with. You know, you unapologetically find what works for your offense and you use that to your advantage. Now, number one, what they did last week didn't work. So if that was the identity, they needed to change. But frankly, I didn't feel like it matched anything we've seen from Penn State this year to this point either. I mean, not only in results, but, you know, Nick and Catron, they had under 10 rushes, you know, throughout the game. Each of them had 9. The run game wasn't necessarily some silver bullet that was going to pull Penn State out of this situation. But I mean, Nick was averaging over 5 yards a carry. Now I know 20 of his, you know, roughly 50 yards came off one run, but
he only had 9.
Right. No statistician is going to look at 9 data points and say, this is significant. You know what I mean? Like that's a random grouping of outcomes. And yeah. You talk about the receiver group. You talk about missing Lonnie White. You talk about missing on the 2 transfers. You talk about Trey Wallace being young and sort of trying to figure this thing out. Where Penn State has recruited really well has been at the running back position, especially with these two guys. To me, that's the answer. That's where you go when the other guys aren't panning out. You lean on, you know, you have a young quarterback who after the game was clearly very flustered, very emotional. As a side note, I'm sure we'll eventually get to this too, but I'm not suddenly out on Drew Aller as a quarterback or anything like that because of this game. I still think that he's got room to grow and everything like that. But there was social media discourse about this all being on Drew. And I just can't comprehend that, frankly. But, you know, you have Nick and Catron, both you know, most likely NFL caliber running backs at the next level. Those are your Marvin Harrison Juniors. Now, I'm not making a, Marvin Harrison is in a class of his own, but those are your two playmakers. It's not Keandre Lambert Smith. You know, as much as I talked about Trey Wallace last week, it's not Trey Wallace. It's Nick and Catron, and it was last year. And I'm sort of confused at some of the answers he has about run pass ratio, you know, about, you know, the identity, about this, about that. I don't know. I just, it was confusing. You look at that third and four. I know I've been going for a while, but you look at that third and four late in the game when they eventually go for it on the fourth and four afterwards. I think it was in the third quarter, maybe. It's the one we were talking about a minute ago.
That was the fourth quarter. Yeah, it was about 8 minutes
it was
left.
The fourth.
Yeah. I still think they should have punted that. And he talked about, and I'm just going to say this, and we'll get you right back to your point. He talked about, well, I thought it was a key point in the game that we were going to go for it on fourth down, and we had 10 or 12 guys on the field. Well, thankfully you had 12 guys on the field, because you should have punted that one. You should have punted both of them. You're in a one-score game. Try to get your defense to force a turnover. Do something. Put them in a position to win it. It didn't make any sense. But continue.
So, to me, I don't necessarily mind them potentially going for it on that fourth down. Two things that I think were mistakes on Penn State's front. Number one was in the play calling leading up to it. If it's third and four and you throw an incomplete pass, now you punt. It's now fourth and four. There's 8 minutes left, like you said. Now you're trusting your defense. But if you know that you're going for it on that fourth down, why are you not running the ball? Number one, why are you not running the ball, period, throughout this game? And we've talked about on that drive, there are two Catron runs. So at this point, at most, he's had seven carries. So, you know, you should be getting these guys involved anyway. Now, I'm obviously not a Division I play caller. I would never pretend to be. I'm not. That's a reason why I'm not paid to call plays. But to me, you look at this and you say, on that first down, Catron runs for three. On the second down, Catron runs for three. On third and four, why not just, you know, let's say Catron gets stuffed. Now, you know, you have a better idea of what that fourth down is going to look like. Throwing it, if you know you're going for it on fourth down, pick up the amount of yardage that you can, and then you have more options in your, if it's fourth and two, now you can run it. Now you can throw it. Now you can do whatever you want. At fourth and four, your hands are sort of tied. The second thing I didn't necessarily think was a great outcome of that drive was the way Franklin was answering questions about it. Is he sort of talked about his discussion of those play calls in that situation was strictly about going for it on fourth down. And I don't know if it was, you know, he just, you know, I'm sure he was in an emotional state because, again, they're losing to Ohio State. You know, I'm sure he didn't want to face, you know, there are a lot of emotions as a coach. It's tough to be in that seat, get all these tough questions thrown at you. I mean, it's part of the job, but I get it. It's tough. But I don't think the issue there was the fourth down call. And so for him to sit there and answer those questions and say, hey, we needed to be aggressive. Hey, we knew we were going to have to go for it on fourth at some point. Hey, like when you're playing a team like Ohio State, you're going to have to do things. No, the issue isn't necessarily that fourth down call. It's that you came into this drive knowing that you were going to go for it on fourth and you chose, you know, we're gonna make it harder on ourselves to reach that. You know what I mean? And so I'm not insinuating that the way he answered that question speaks to a confusing thought process and how they're calling plays and stuff like that. But when that's the face that you project forward to the public, to me, it looks sloppy. It looks incompetent. That sort of thing is not that's not the answer that's, you know, even if that's the question that was asked, that's not how you should be addressing that, in my opinion.
I don't even think that was a question that was asked. And I agree with you. That was a very, James has had some really good press conferences where he's sent the right message. This might be his worst ever. I think he'd like to have the, you know, elite thing back after the game 5 years ago, but this one, I think he should want back. This whole thing was rough. I don't know if anybody questioned the fourth down. I get why you would go for it, but I think in the sense that, and I look at it as after you pass on third down and it's incomplete and you look like a mess, which they did on that third down play, you punt it and just say, look, we have to let the defense, maybe we get the strip sack again. Maybe You know, maybe Denai gets in there. Maybe Isaac makes a play. We got to do something on defense. That, I think that's the way you got to look at it. But to get back the identity thing real quick before we break, it's hard to find a game. I did, but it was difficult. It's hard to find a game where they called less than 20 running plays and more than 40 passes. I mean, you're talking a handful of games over decades where that happened. And they're on an 11-game winning streak coming into this game. We're talking about identity. And you're right. You put it better than I would ever have put it. That's a goal and not an identity. This team's identity for a long time, run the football, run it more than you throw it, make big plays in the passing game, but keep them honest. That's the way they've been able to do it with one dominant receiver and a bunch of complimentary guys, which they don't have the one dominant receiver this year, but that's a, we've had that discussion. Last game, they threw it more than they ran it. Ohio State last year. They threw it more than they ran it three games last year. I want you to tell me two of the opponents.
Well, I feel like it's got to be Ohio State and Michigan.
Ohio State and Michigan. They lose the games. I mean, for whatever reason, they threw it more against Central Michigan, but I think it was close. In 2020, again, down in these games, but Ohio State, Maryland, Iowa in 2020, threw it more than they ran it. Loss, loss, loss. One time in 2019, one time, and they threw it more than they ran it. Minnesota, loss. It's the pattern that you don't win that way. If you're that Penn State doesn't win if they don't focus on running the ball. And I'm picking it. I'm not picking and choosing. I'm using a, I'm taking a big list of games. It's a, and some of them, I admit you're down, you're way down, especially those 2020 games. You're down early. You have to come back and try to throw your way back into it. But this is a one score game. This game is going the way you want it. Ohio State's moving the ball and you're bending but not breaking on defense. Yeah, and look, it's a shame for Penn State that Kalen King held on the scoop and score. Very unfortunate for them. But he held. I tend to lose any sympathy for them when I look at the replay and King is holding and Curtis Jacobs is in the shot. So, yeah, that's the absolute right. I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, the fix is in. Fix was not in. He held Marvin Harrison. That's another great part about being Marvin Harrison is that sometimes great cornerbacks have to hold you. But this idea that, the ratio wasn't that far off. We were where we wanted to be, which is, we just didn't convert on third downs. It's crap. You didn't convert on third downs because you were throwing on third downs. They had 5 third and shorts, and they threw on 4 of them. Come on. That's why you lost. You threw the ball too much. Admit it. Admit it, James. All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk about some Drew Aller. How about that? That's always an interesting topic. We'll talk about Drew in a second. I want to say something here after the first segment that I think is important for everybody to understand. You know, I was in the media room after the game on Saturday. I saw Drew Aller. His face was, it looked like he had been in a 12-round heavyweight fight, crying. There's no other way to put it. Very emotional. It meant something to him. It means more to these guys than anybody else. Penn State loses, I go out for a hamburger afterwards, no matter whether they win, lose, or draw. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know what Sam does after a game. I don't know what any fans do. I hope it doesn't ruin your entire weekend, Sam. I would hope the fans, you know, they don't sit there and after games just let it destroy their Saturday night. But it means more to James Franklin than anybody else on the planet how they play in these games, and it means more to a guy like Drew Aller. Where I felt bad for him at his press conference and where I feel bad for him after games is when he, you know, when he gets asked, why didn't you use Bo Prabula? And I sit there thinking to myself, this guy watches every practice. Not only does he watch every practice, he watches the film of every practice and probably does it twice before he goes out to the next practice and does the same thing over and over again. This guy watches more football than any of us. I'm sure he watched that disaster 4 or 5 times and he relives it over and over again. He wants to beat Ohio State worse than anybody does. So when he gets asked, know, why didn't you use Bo Prabula more? I wonder what he really wants to say. And nothing against Bo, but you think it's tough, these receivers, you know, getting any kind of separation and the ball having to be thrown on a dime and everything having to be perfect just to get these guys the ball. You think that's not magnified by the fact that the guy who clearly is your backup guy is in the game now? And I get, you know, fans want to see the quarterback running the ball a little bit and things like that. And I don't know that there is a Bo Prabula package, but I don't see any after last year where every week it's, why don't you play Drew Moore? Why don't you play Drew Moore? You got to get this guy in the game. He's 6-0 at the beginning of this season, playing lights out, not turning the ball over, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions, whatever the number was. And now he stinks. Now you see enough people saying, oh, let's get Bo in there. Let's play this guy more. Drew is not developing the right way. He's, you know, you get this five-star kid and he turns, I saw somebody say, you get a five-star kid and he turns into Paul Cianciolo. Come on, guys. He started seven games. This is not a finished product yet. It's not even close. Everybody's got him winning the Heisman, got him in the NFL. This is growing pains for a kid. Now, completely fair to say coaches didn't put him in a position to succeed. I agree with that. But to say he stinks, to say he's not going to get there, to say this is not the kind of player you want at quarterback, I don't know what fans are thinking. Come on, guys, use your heads.
Yeah, so I remember when Drew was being recruited, one of the names that he was being compared to in the NFL, you know, as a comp, was Josh Allen. And two thoughts on that. Number one, that's a comp for by the time he's ready for the NFL. That does not mean Correct. He's Josh Allen as a senior in high school. Number two, it's not even where I was going with this originally, but I mean, you even look at Josh Allen when he made the NFL, and Josh Allen was a joke his rookie year. You know, it was the throwing fumbles behind him in the playoffs, Josh Allen. Now, I'm not saying Drew Aller's a joke by any stretch, but I'm just saying, even when you make the NFL, there's growing pains there. And now, you know, Josh Allen is put in every top five quarterback list known to man, you know, and it took a while to get there. Now, I mean, you look at Drew Aller and, you know, he didn't play great on Saturday. You know, I don't think anybody's disputing that, but point me to people on the offense who did, frankly. You know, it's the fact that there has been so much. Now, again, how much of it is legitimate criticism? How much of it is fans emotional online with knowing that there's no repercussions to whatever they send out to them directly? But number one, calling for Bo Prabula is idiotic. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, if you want to see him out there occasionally, that's fine. You know, there's no knock on Bo, but they did not just undergo everything they went through last season dealing with the questions about Drew behind Sean just to go put Drew out there for his first big start in his career and then pull him for the guy that was recruited in the same class. That could devastate both players' developments instantly. And by the way, they put Bo in that game. You're still not winning that game. So
you're losing, you know, worse.
Right. You're just throwing punches for no reason. And it's counterproductive at that. Two, you know, for all the talk about a Bo Prabula package, I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. I think you should always be coming up with creative ways to use your players in the best way that you can. But, you know, for the, again, and I'm perhaps speaking about, you know, some of the fringe minorities of Penn State viewers, but, you know, the people complaining about, you know, not seeing enough Bo, you know, it's the old quarterback phrase, you know, the saying of, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. I mean, when Will Levis was at Penn State using the Falcon package, I think it was called, you know, it was Sean and Will.
The devastating Falcon package.
Yeah. I was a freshman in college when I first was exposed to the Falcon package. Was that very popular? I don't think people really loved that.
People love anything that the backup quarterback does. Tommy Stevens used to do, Yeah, no, they would bring Tommy Stevens in. And look, I loved Tommy Stevens. I like watching quarterbacks before the game, and I'm thinking, oh man, this guy has every tool. If he could put it together. Well, he didn't put it together. You know how I know he didn't put it together? Because he never played quarterback for Penn State. That's how, because if they're seeing it in practice, they're going to get excited about it. They're going to put it in there, but the consistency wasn't there. And he's playing behind a really good player. But since he's a really good player, they found ways to get him in there. They basically used him as a running back. They used him as a tight end. Same kind of thing they did with Levis, even though Levis wasn't anywhere near as dynamic as Tommy Stevens, which I think Tommy Stevens is a little bit of ahead of his time because he could have been a first round NFL pick too, I guess, or an early second round or whatever Will was. But yeah, you know, if you use a quarterback, a backup quarterback, and he comes in, he has any success at all, and you give that quarterback a real fancy name for bringing him in, that's what fans want. They want the Falcon package, which I think Will came up with on his own. I think that was a Will thing, because Will was creative in that. Will marketed himself as well as anybody. But it's all nice, but is it effective? Yeah, they use the Tommy Stevens package, whatever, I forget what that one was. That had a cool name too. But yeah, you bring him in against Michigan, didn't look so great against Michigan, because Michigan knew enough to stop that. And yeah, I get the point of having the package. I'm not sure that exists. They keep saying it does, and I'm not sure what it does. And you're right. What the one thing I know it would do is create a lot of controversy where there doesn't have to be any. Drew is developing at an acceptable rate for a quarterback. Now, I know Penn State fans look at it probably the same way I look at it. Drew, after next season, is probably looking at the NFL anyway, and you only have two seasons with him as a starter. So he's going to come in, and he better be good, or else you're not getting where you want to get with Drew. And you get Ohio State. And I asked James last week about Drew in that environment, and I had some concerns with Drew going back home, a lot of issues, and they potential issues anyway. I did think he was going to play well. I didn't think he was going to play subpar, and he played subpar. But I certainly at no point watching that game thought, hey, they should really go to Bo here. Let's see what he's got. That's suicidal for your offense. It really is. Drew is taking every snap with the first team. You know, the first team never came out of that game, and none of them played well. Olu played bad. Olu, who never gave up a sack in his life. Wasn't a great game for Olu. Wasn't a great game for the offensive line. That's your strength. Your strength is your offensive line and your running game. Once those guys kind of started losing athletic battles against JTT and Sawyer and Talik Williams, that's where you're in some trouble there at that point. But you have to, as a fan, as a coach, as a coordinator, go into a game like that expecting they're going to win their share of battles. How do we win our share? And that's where Penn State didn't help Drew. He didn't win his share of battles. He lost most battles. I can't think of a play Drew made that I thought, well, that's going to turn it for them. That's going to get him going. They never put him in that spot where there was that one play where, you know, you thought it would turn things around. And I think that's a coach's responsibility, but I think fans have a responsibility too. In the media, quite frankly, the media is just as, if not more, responsible for this. To use some common sense and say, hey, you can't just keep going and making the backup quarterback a story. That doesn't help anybody. That doesn't help the development of the guy who is your guy. And he's been your guy. He was your guy when Clifford was your guy. Because everything they did last year was to get this guy ready to play in this game. And now I know we're going to have fans writing me and saying, but they didn't do it because he wasn't ready to play. But he wasn't going to be ready to play in this game. I'm convinced now. He was never going to be ready to play in this game. You know, you could give him as many stars as you want and the ratings, but he's a young kid. You didn't see him after the game. He looked like a 19-year-old who lost for the first time in his life. And if this doesn't make him better, you know, I think down the road you'd think, oh, you know, maybe he missed. But this game should make him better. Playing in this kind of competition should make him better. And that's part of development too, is losing. And I am still bullish on Drew as a quarterback. I compared him to Dan Marino. I think someday, if everything hits, that's the kind of guy he could be. a pocket guy who has some athleticism, who could shoot down the field better than anybody. But he's not that yet. Right now, he's just Drew Aller. He's just some kid from Ohio who's trying to figure it all out. And I think he's got the tools that can make him, help him figure it out. Not make him, but help him to figure it out. But to view it any other way to me is kind of asinine. You know, just because Trevor Lawrence could do it, Drew should do it. No, Trevor Lawrence is different. And not saying Drew's not different, but most quarterbacks, this is a step. He's not a finished product by any means. He's still got a lot of developing to do. And there's questions. Hey, is Penn State the team to develop him? I don't know, but I know Penn State's gotten quarterbacks to the NFL at a better rate under Franklin than they ever did under Joe Paterno. But I think that if you're a fan and you've lost confidence in Drew, then what kind of confidence do you have in the program? Drew is the program right now. And there's a lot of facets to it, but Drew is still the marquee guy. He's still the guy that if it doesn't happen with him, it's not going to happen. And I still think there's plenty of evidence that it's going to happen, that they're going to get where they want to go because of Drew and not in spite of Drew. But to view anything based on this game about him and his ability, it's kind of foolish.
Like you said, I mean, I almost don't want to harp on it too much because I don't see how Drew is the biggest story coming out of this game, but I mean, how many people were victory lapping when Quinn Ewers transferred from Ohio State to Texas?
Everybody.
You know what I mean?
Everybody in Happy Valley.
Right. And now, I mean, Quinn Ewers is probably going to end up being a first-round pick in the NFL. Texas is back to being in the top 10. You know, I know they fell to Oklahoma and everything. So, but they recently had national championship aspirations, and they still have conference championship aspirations. They're still one of the 10 best teams in the country. You know, I'm not insinuating Drew Aller's about to transfer to a Big 12 school, but, you know, I just mean that some of these players, it takes a change of scenery. Sometimes it takes, you know, a change in coaching staff. In some cases, it might be, you know, a game like this, you know, a game where you look yourself in the mirror and it's a way to grow.
And in some cases, maybe it takes a year. Maybe it just takes some experience because he had a good year last year. Aller's going to end up with a year this year that is very reminiscent of the year that Ewers had last year. It just takes some time. It was too much too quick.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fact that he was anointed as sort of the, you know, the saving grace immediately never really made sense. I mean, like you said, sure, Trevor Lawrence came in and did it, but how many Trevor Lawrences are there? It's not many.
No.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, you look at the way Drew answered those questions at the press conference, you know, those first couple answers being, you know, one, two, three words, you know, fighting back tears, that sort of thing, you know, and I don't say that to, you know, hopefully that doesn't, it's not embarrassing. I mean, I don't think there's anything embarrassing about that. I mean, he cares about his team. He takes it very seriously. He's holding himself accountable. You know, I think that's a great step. It's a great sign of maturity. It's a great step towards, you know, using this as a building block for the rest of your future. And frankly, I think that's what you want. The face of a program, face of a franchise, face of an offense. It's what you want them to do. I'm not saying I want anybody to be crying after games and stuff like that. You know, I feel bad for them. But the fact that he cares so deeply is a good sign. And the fact that he's willing to put himself in the positions to be asked those questions is another good sign. I mean, perhaps this is an unfair comparison. It's gonna sound more negative than I mean it. But James was asked after the Ohio State game about, you know, is it fair to judge you on the losses against Ohio State and Michigan? He said, you know, we're not going to talk about that right now. We'll talk about that Wednesday. You know, you contrast that with Drew. How do you think you played today? Sucked. What do you go? You know, how do you feel? I never want to feel like this again. When was the last time you felt like this? My last game in high school. Just very quick, very short. Very honest, very raw. I mean, I don't know how you can come away from this game with negative opinions about Drew Aller still. I mean, yeah, he didn't play great, but let's be serious for a minute. Come on.
My gut reaction after that game was Drew did himself some favors. He started to kind of lose control, but like to really show emotion after he was asked, you know, when was the last time you felt this way? And I think it brought back some memories of, you know, we lost our last high school game. I was devastating. And I think that kind of got him going. I think he was holding it together pretty much until that point, but he's clearly hates losing, and it clearly means a lot to him. And I thought that was a really good sign for Penn State. And I don't think he was over emotional. I think he was mad. I don't think he was sad. I don't think he played poorly and I let my team down and all. He was mad that they lost. He's mad that they put that much work into it and had that kind of view of what they could do, and it didn't work out. And nothing they did mattered, and it was all for nothing in his mind. I think he's mad. And sometimes when you're mad enough, it makes you better. And I didn't think anything that he said in that post game or anything that he represented led me to believe that he doesn't have what it takes to be the starting quarterback. It led me to believe he does. It was the complete opposite. And I agree with you that, you know, sometimes I think it's a little off the subject, but sometimes these guys, they get so much media training, and that's Penn State, that's professional sports everywhere, where they have these canned answers and they know what to say and they say it and it doesn't really help them. And sometimes I think being honest helps you, and it helps you with the fans. Maybe it helps you help yourself in some ways. But I didn't see a lot of that on social media after the game. I saw a lot of, you know, we need to figure something else out here because clearly Drew's not the answer. And a lot's maybe not the right way to put that. But I saw enough of it to make me think that people think it. It's ludicrous because this guy's still, he's still the talented guy he was going into that game. He just has a loss now. And sometimes you do need to lose to get better. But there was a last chance element about this game that I think still doesn't sit well with me as a, you know, where does did the program ever show it could beat Ohio State when it had to? Not really. But it's not because of Drew. And the receivers too, for a lot of the reasons I brought up earlier, they have some excuses. That's not a great group of receivers, and it wasn't designed to be that way. It just happened to be that way. For me, the guy's not getting enough blame for this. Offensive line wasn't great. Just wasn't great against an Ohio State defensive line that I thought it kind of matched up okay with. Last year when Olu was blocking JTT, I think Penn State won its battles there. And then when they switched JTT to the other side, he won his share of battles. But this year they had Tuimoloau on Olu enough, and the guy who got better was Tuimoloau. And Jack Sawyer, I thought he had his moment. There was some times there where they adjusted to the run and kind of got Penn State off that mindset where they could run it. So I thought Ohio State did some things adjusting in that game that Penn State's coaches didn't do. I think the coaches, they're getting their share of the blame for sure, but probably not enough of it. Offensive line didn't play well. They didn't scheme Marvin Harrison well enough at all. So I think that to me is where, if there's a level of disappointment with Penn State, it should be in those areas, and definitely not with Drew, and definitely not with the receivers who, you know, they didn't play well enough. But I didn't, you know, look, go back and listen to last week's podcast. We didn't think the receivers were going to show well in this game, and they didn't. So some of the younger guys were okay. The safeties, I had some questions about. I thought they played well. I thought they played okay at linebacker. I thought they rushed the passer very well. But other areas where I thought they were strong, they just weren't as strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think all that's correct. I think a lot of the times pointing fingers at coaches and preparation and stuff is sort of a knee-jerk reflex of sure. People. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff about, you know, conversations about James Franklin's ceiling and the awful 10-2 season that awaits Penn State this year and all that sort of discourse. And you know, there's a legitimate way to have the conversation about, and I know that's not where you were going, obviously, but
no, yeah.
I know that, you know, there's a legitimate conversation to be had about James Franklin and some of these bigger games, you know, the narrative style questions. But again, I said this a couple years ago when I said to extend James. If for the people out there who want James gone after this past weekend, number one, I take a cold shower and let's reassess afterwards. But number two, point me to who is gonna lift that ceiling. If it's not James Franklin, you know, who is it? I might be with you. You know, I might agree, but you know, there needs to be a name. That's how programs die. I mean, you look at, you know, Texas fires Mack Brown, and it's 15 years until they're competent again. You know, it's not like I said, James Franklin has his issues. You know, we've talked about a lot of them in this podcast, and a lot of these are recurring issues, and they need to be addressed, and he needs to be held accountable. It's just a matter of what that looks like. Is this game a fireable offense for James Franklin? That feels a little rash, but and I get the complaints about ceilings, and I get the complaints about recurring mistakes and this and recruiting and this, that, and the other thing. But it feels in the same vein as the, you know, just pull Drew, put the backup quarterback in. Something can be on the coaching staff and not be earth-shattering at the same time. I don't know. It feels like a big loss in Penn State's history, especially where it's at as a program right now. I just think people need to take some deep breaths and consider everything when you're, because like you said, fans and media have a responsibility to address things in rational ways. I'm not saying it's necessarily irrational to question James Franklin or his security or anything like that. I'm sure there's somebody out there who can put a rational case together, but you as a fan can create a lot of, an individual voice does have repercussions. Some of these, I mean, who's to say how much the distraction of Drew Aller behind Sean Clifford, you know, got under the offensive skin? Who knows? You know, these things matter. I don't know. I'm not a go fire your coach type of guy after a loss. I don't know.
We probably make a boring podcast on that because I am not either. That's where I think it's great that Penn State fans are on the, you know, we got to move on from this guy bandwagon because they had the same coach for 50 years. And
yeah,
I don't think that's ever an answer because you never see the team that dumps their guy and brings in somebody who's going to change everything in a year. I think you could hire a good coach. You know, Penn State hired O'Brien out of sheer necessity. That was not going to be or anybody like that under different circumstances, but I think he was the right guy at the time. But generally speaking, these teams that hire and fire coaches all the time, it's not because their players are bad. It's they're bad because they're hiring and firing coaches all the time. I ask myself when we're coming back from the game, it's a long drive, and I'm thinking, if Penn State could get Ryan Day, would they fire James Franklin? I don't think they would, and I don't think they should. I don't think that's necessarily going to benefit them. I think they're still the same program with Ryan Day. So you're looking, you know, who is that other guy that's going to come in? Who's the guy that loves that school? Who's the guy that knows that area? Who's the guy that believes in what you're doing to the point where he's that perfect fit? I don't know that there is the guy. I think the one guy in the country who looks at Penn State as a dream job, truly looks at Penn State as a dream job, is James Franklin. And he's perfectly good at what he does. Is he going to be at Ohio State's level? No, but I don't necessarily think that's all James's fault either. And what he said the other day, I think was kind of poignant. The one good moment I think he had in that whole press conference was, it's fair to judge Penn State on the fact that it hasn't beaten Ohio State ever. And he seems to get how frustrating that is and what fans think, but they've beaten everybody else. And not only have they beaten everybody else, they've until the last couple of years. And look, we could have probably talked about this, but until the last couple of years, they've beaten Michigan pretty regularly too. Now I think you have to wonder how that's going down, but whatever. But they had a pretty good success rate against Michigan when they're, you know, outside of those couple of years where Michigan State was really good. They've handled Michigan State. They've done a great job against the rest of the Big Ten. Even Iowa. Iowa's got this reputation as being a Penn State killer. Penn State's beaten Iowa a pretty good amount of times. I think it's really just Ohio State when you break it down in the Big Ten. Who doesn't Penn State compete with? They don't compete with Ohio State. But Ohio State's one of those three programs that every year are going to be in it. And, you know, they're even talking to, they don't like Ryan Day out there. There's a segment of fans that don't love Ryan Day. They think that they could be even better than they are. That's the nature of the business. That's the nature of the beast. But there's, you know, who's the coach out there sitting out there doing a great job with a team that's willing to come to Penn State and take on Ohio State every year and go through that emotional up and down of, hey, we're there, we're there, we're there, we're there. Oh yeah, we're not there yet. We're there again this is the year. And then it's not the year. Who's willing to do that? Pushing that rock up the hill. There's not a lot of coaches who want that. There's coaches who will go to where it's easier. Penn State's where it's harder right now. And James willing to do that is, I think he's the right guy. I think James gets a really crazy reputation for a lot of things that I don't think James is. But I think James is a very good coach. I think he's the right guy to get Penn State over the mountain. I really do. But it doesn't help when, you know, that press conference didn't help him. And I think one thing he does well is explain why that is this way without burning a bridge. And maybe he's trying to do that in this sense. I would expect, you know, if things don't get better this year, if they struggle mightily against Michigan, he might have to make some changes. But that's another good thing about James. He's willing to do that. He has been willing to roll the dice on coordinators. He didn't have to fire Kirk Ciarrocca. They had something going there. They had won 5 in a row. He didn't have to fire Kirk Ciarrocca. He went in and brought Yurcich in. He didn't have to go and get a defensive coordinator to replace a really good friend of his in Brent Pry. He didn't have to go and get a defensive coordinator with head coaching experience, because that's a threat to him. There's not a lot of coaches who would do that. He goes out and gets a guy who conceivably is going to be a threat to his job. Conceivably. I don't think he is, but I think conceivably he is. And he goes out and gets the best guy because he's the best guy. I think James gets a really bad rap for a lot of things. I mean, maybe game day coaching is a part of it, but you know, he's doing what all these other coaches do. They delegate. You know, it's Yurcich's job to call the plays. It's Manny's job to call the plays. And he steps in and suggests. And I think it's a little troubling that he didn't realize that the ratio here was as off as it was. And in some ways, maybe he hasn't looked at it quite that way yet, or maybe he isn't going to look at it that way. But yeah, I think to a certain degree, Penn State fans have to look at this and say, is this a program defining loss? And my response is, it is if you make it one. And do you have to make it one? I don't know, but it feels bad. It feels like a really bad loss, and it feels like it could be really terrible if you make it that way. But I don't necessarily know if you need to make it that way. I think you could just stay the course, look at it and say, hey, quarterback's young. He'll get better. We need a receiver. Fine, we'll go get one. Doing a good job in the transfer portal. It's okay. We'll figure it out. Once the landscape changes, we'll figure it out. But I think at this point right now, James is going to have to weather the heat. He is. And I get that. But I still think he's the right guy. I still think they're in good shape with what they have. And you know, somebody on Twitter posed this question, and we only have a minute or so left here, so I might just leave it with this, but or give you a quick thought. But is being really good enough for Penn State? And I don't think it is. I think you want to take that shot at it. But, you know, next year they have a chance to be the team you don't want to play in the tournament. And I don't know if that's really where they want to be either, the team you don't want to play. But I think they want to be the team that is going to win the tournament, or the team that has a chance to win the tournament. You know, maybe that's 5, 6, 7 years down the road. Maybe it's not right now. And I think that's kind of what I took out of what happened in Columbus over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look, assuming they lose to Michigan, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the season and everything, 10-2 with a New Year's Six Bowl, that's not bad. And anybody who's convinced that it is, maybe you need to start realigning some priorities. You know, the threat of being a, like you said, a playoff spoiler in the 12-team format is an excellent spot to be in as a team. And it, certainly you want to shoot for higher. But Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't won a New Year's Six Bowl since the 90s. I don't think anybody would say Notre Dame is a devastating program or anything like that. My challenge to anybody who still disagrees with you and I about Franklin is give me a name. You know, I want to hear the name. You can tweet me at Sam, Fremin. Send me the name. I'm not convinced. Convince me otherwise.
I'll send you Belichick. No. Send the name the name of somebody who's actually maybe taking the job. So you
right.
Come up
if
with a
you can get
name.
Nick don't, Saban on the phone.
Yeah. Don't say Nick
fine.
Saban.
You win.
Don't say Lincoln Riley. Just don't. All right, Sam, thanks so much for the, I guess, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to say funeral, but you know, for the discussion after Penn State's loss last week. I think it hopefully it'll help talk some people back into reality. Sam, thanks so much. We'll do it again next week after probably a win. That's the way things seem to go. So again, Penn State loses to Ohio State last week. It's not over, guys. Still season to play. Still a lot of football to talk about. For Sam, this is Donnie Collins. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week in better times, guys.